Hi, I'm Leah Canland with my husband Steve, and you're listening to Our Insightful Adventures, a show that chronicles our travels around Australia and the savvy, scientific, and scenic things we experience along the way.
So in this podcast, we are going to talk about our last 7 days in Victoria. So after we got off the ferry from Tasmania back in Melbourne, we decided to go kind of southwest over the Great Ocean Road, which is an awesome road, and we'll talk about in this episode. And then we went from there kind of to the other side, east, southeast of Melbourne, to a place called Wilson's Promontory, or Wilson's Prom. And then we went from there kind of up to the border of New South Wales. And we traveled 1,527 kilometers or 916 miles. And we did that in 7 days.
So as Steve just mentioned, we spent 2 days on the Great Ocean Road, which is a pretty famous scenic stretch of coastline in Australia. It's 243 kilometers or 150 miles, and it's technically between these obscure cities of Torquay and Alansford, but it's gorgeous.
It is gorgeous, and that's kind of roughly between these two cities, but it kind of goes a little bit further in east direction, and it just kind of follows the coastline, and there's stops and scenic things you can see along the way, and it's a very popular, very like touristy thing to do in Victoria.
Yeah, and it has a pretty impressive history. It was opened in 1921, and it was built, it took 12 years and about 3,000 men to build it. And they actually only employed returned servicemen of the First World War. And the reason that was done is because they wanted to help these soldiers and sailors reassimilate into society, and also as a way to reward them for their contribution, I guess, to the nation. And they sort of explain, there's plaques along the way on the Great Ocean Road if you pull off on all of these, you know, beautiful twists and turns. And one of the plaques was talking about just the way that it was constructed. And since it was on such tight corners and stuff, they would pretty much just have to use, you know, pickaxes and wheelbarrows and horses and carts, and they would have to blast the sides of these sheer limestone cliffs to make way for these roads. And soldiers, some soldiers found the blasting of dynamite traumatic. They still had shell shock from the war. So it was brutal physically, but also for some of the soldiers, mentally as well.
Gosh, and that is probably just so early, not early in history, but before the effects of PTSD or of how traumatic events really affect anyone mentally. So I don't know, it's kind of crazy that they're like, oh, these men are coming back from war, they need jobs, we're going to give them jobs. And it probably didn't ever occur to anyone, like, oh, we're going to be using explosives, maybe this isn't the best place for our veterans.
Yeah, exactly. And it was actually a steady job through the Great Depression as well. I mean, it provided a continuous, valuable work for these servicemen. So it was, the Great Ocean Road, it was hard work, but it provided a good service for these soldiers that deserved a break.
I mean, that's good. I'm glad that they created this a job for them to come back to, so they didn't just get lost in society, because that, as we are aware of, can be another big pitfall for veterans. So I'm glad they kind of planned for them somewhat. It just was too early before they really understood the effects of war on the mental
state. Yeah,
veterans. Interesting. Anyways, there's a lot of stopovers on the Great Ocean Road. And one of the biggest ones that is most famous for is called the 12 Apostles.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, so the 12 Apostles originally was called the Sow and Pigs, or the Pinnacles.
The Sow and Pigs?
Yeah.
Oh, like a sow? Like a...
I don't necessarily know where the origins of the name is, but the site was originally called Sow and Pigs. Or the Pinnacles, and it had a couple of names, but eventually the popular name of the 12 Apostles stuck. But there actually never was 12.
I didn't see 12.
No, I didn't either. There was only ever 9, and now there's only 8 because the 9th dramatically got eroded so much that it fell in 2005.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so now there's only 8. And as the ocean continues to erode away this cliff, more will fall, but more will be formed. But I mean, that's over...
Not in our lifetime.
or anyone's lifetime, right? That's a span of thousands or millions of years. But it's just 12 Apostles. No one knows how that name really came to be, but it was the popular one that stuck, and it's still what it's called today.
Yeah, and it is probably the most touristy thing you can do on this stretch of road, and that doesn't make it less gorgeous. It was just super crowded, and there's a boardwalk, and there's a few different vantage points. You can see these just, huge towering limestone structures. Yeah, coming out of the ocean, and you can't access them from the beach. It's all very well protected, but there's boardwalks and walkways, and
you can take helicopter rides. There's helicopter rides. Yeah. They were booking people through. Like, I couldn't have been, we didn't look into it, but it couldn't have been that long of a flight. Cause
no, I'm thinking like a 15-minute helicopter ride is all that you would pay for.
Yeah. I'm sure it was beautiful from that vantage point.
Yeah. Yeah, but there were a few other highlights for me along the Great Ocean Road. I actually thought that the 12 Apostles was a little hyped up.
It was a little hyped up. Yeah. 'Cause you see pictures of it and you hear about it, you're like, oh, that's awesome. And it was cool. I'm not trying to downgrade it at all. Just, it was a little hyped.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot to see. There's tons of popular surfing beaches that we checked out. There were waterfalls. We happened to go to 2 waterfalls, Erskine Falls and Hopeton Waterfalls. And there, in this last week in Victoria, we spent a lot of time in subtropical rainforests. And it was pretty much the same exact ecosystem that was in Tasmania. It was just really, I mean, it makes a lot of sense because, obviously Tasmania eventually broke away from the mainland, but the plant species were super similar, and it was kind of cool to leave Tasmania, but feel like we were still there a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Just a lot of rainforest, a lot of green, which is just testament of how diverse Australia is. We come from Western Australia, which is just desert, and then on the other side, there's just really green, lush,
rainforests. Yeah, there are like these really cool tree ferns. I mean, they're all types of ferns, you know, the ferns that you would imagine growing on the bottom, but like also these tree ferns that the trunk was, I mean, it wasn't like as tall as a huge forest tree, but it was still taller than Steve or I, with these like fern fronds sort of coming out like a palm tree almost. And there was another kind of tree on a walk that we did called Mate's Rest Walk that has mountain ash trees, which is a type of eucalyptus tree. And it's a super tall tree. And that was the tree, if you remember, that had the bark that kind of came off in those long ribbons.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were saying that they're... The bark comes off like huge ribbons, and it contributes about 40 tons of organic litter per year in that part of the forest, and that enriches the soils there and helps recycle and, you know, makes the trees grow again, you know, from a seed. So thought that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. A few other things that we did there, we saw... we looked for koalas in a town called Kennett River.
We found some. That was also had a lot of people hanging around.
Yeah, but they were like, I don't know, there was something else going on with the birds.
Yeah, they were playing with the birds. It wasn't really, they weren't. Anyways, yeah.
But yeah, just a lot of rainforest walks and a lot of driving and just gorgeous beaches.
So one of my other favorite things on the Great Ocean Road was kind of off the beaten path. I was on this dirt road, and it had these redwood trees, these California redwood trees. And they were planted in 1938. And now it's just this, I don't know, it's not necessarily a forest, but it's a pretty big grove of these trees. And I couldn't find any information on why they were planted. Presumably they were planted so that they could harvest them later, because the redwood wood is very valuable. It still is. But they have just thrived in this environment. And now they're protected, which is actually super rare for an introduced species to be protected under any like national forest or protected, so they can't cut them down now. But they're going strong. They're tall. I haven't been to the redwoods in California, and these ones are much younger than those, even though they're almost like 80. Redwoods can live over 1,000 years. So these trees are still going strong. And there's some information that's saying that they'll start to become more and more touristy just because they're protected. You can't cut them down. But I really liked it. It was super peaceful. And yeah, I really quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was amazing too. Like Steve, I haven't had the chance to go to the redwood forest in California, but they were still gigantic. And it, since it was sort of this random obscure thing you can do on the Great Ocean Road, we had that little patch of trees to ourselves for a little while, and then eventually there was another couple that came, but it was very humbling to be there.
Yeah, it's cool to be. And these trees are still, you know, they're 79, 80 years old, whatever, but have the potential to live over 1,000 years. There's something about being in the presence of a living thing that can outlive humans, outlive cultures even, just outlive really anything that we as a humans have a mindset on. And there's something kind of majestic and humbling about these living things that are just kind of oblivious, not oblivious, but just, I don't know, are overreaching what we would call, you know, a lifespan or time.
Yeah. So after our 2 days exploring the Great Ocean Road, we doubled back, went back through Melbourne, and then made our way to the southeast coast of Victoria, to a place called Wilson's Promontory National Park, or Wilson's Prom.
Yeah, it was cool. And it's supposed to just be a sanctuary for wildlife and a lot of nature walks. And yeah, it was quite cool.
Yeah, we showed up on a Saturday and it was beautiful weather, which is awesome, but it was also super crowded.
Yeah.
And the one of the most popular hikes to do is climbing Mount Oberon. And so that is what we ended up doing. You get 360 views of the park, and you get to see, we saw 3 different bays, technically 4 different beaches from that vantage point at the top of this pretty easy hike. It was technically a gravel road.
Yeah, so it was steep, but it wasn't terribly long, and the only thing was difficult is that it was steep. It wasn't rocky or...
Yeah, and there were enough switchbacks that it wasn't even that bad either. So...
Yeah, but it was pretty at the top.
Yeah. And then after that, since we only gave ourselves 1 day at Wilson's Prom, there's tons more to do, but we decided to spend the afternoon at Squeaky Beach.
And there's actually, we've been to a lot of beaches that squeak. The sand is so fine that when you walk on it, it squeaks. And we've been to several squeaky beaches at different parts of Australia, but this one specifically is called Squeaky Beach.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, after spending time around Australia, there are certain things that, you know, states or beaches or national parks sort of claim as being like, oh, this is the one and only. And you're like, oh, actually, I've seen lots of things that are like this. They're all beautiful, but yeah, it's just funny that. Anyway, so we went to Squeaky Beach. Not only does it have super fine sand, but it has really big boulders that are covered in orange lichen. Again, similar to Bay of Fires that had big boulders covered in orange lichen. And that was nice. It was a crowded beach just because it was a really good beach day. But we hung out there and then had dinner and went to our campsite.
Yeah. And on the way to our campsite, we were driving, and as we were coming up, I saw something in the road, and I thought it was a wombat. So I slowed down, but lo and behold, it was just this koala just walking up middle of the road, and then he just sat there in the middle of the road and was not bothered by anything. And so I stopped, so because I didn't want to kill a little guy, and he just sat there and looked for, I don't know, several minutes, and then he just continued to walk towards the car and then went off to the side.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was amazing.
We have a video of it on our Instagram if you're curious to know what the little guy looked like.
Oh, so adorable. We took tons more pictures than what we posted. But that was awesome. Some other opportunities for wildlife that we tried to take advantage of, but it didn't really work out, is that there's a short prom wildlife walk at Wilson's Prom. And you are, you know, kind of encouraged to go there at dawn or dusk, which is when a lot of iconic Australian mammals marsupials kind of come out. And so we only saw animals that we've kind of seen before. I don't know if we're a little too snobby now with like, oh man, this didn't top our amazing experience, but the prom wildlife walk for us was just seeing some distant kangaroos and some distant emus.
And maybe one wombat super far away.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, a little fur ball that might have been a wombat far away. So anyways, I think that you can have an incredible experience on that wildlife walk, but it was just meh for us.
Yeah, we just didn't. But still worth to do if you're there.
Yeah, yeah, that was the last thing that we did at Wilson's Prom. And then after Wilson's Prom, we just spent our last 2 days in Victoria doing whatever we could with the unfortunate rain that plagued us.
So much rain.
Yeah, it was 2 straight days of rain. And so
it was like 4 straight days of rain.
Well, in Victoria, it was 2 straight days of rain.
Okay.
But preview, regardless, it kept raining. We went to New South Wales.
And just rained. And like, it's just the rain where it's just drizzling. It's not like downpouring. It's just drizzling. So just, you're constantly wet. And like, we've been in Northern Territory when it would just monsoon down, but it would come down for like an hour or two and then stop and you could do something. But this was just wet for days.
So there's a lot of things that I wanted to do and see, and there are actually tons of national parks just sort of peppered around Victoria. But we just, you know, we saw a lighthouse. We went to farmers markets. We did some more rainforest walks, but that was kind of all that we could do. We also went and saw a movie.
Just because we
trying to stay out of the rain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was our last 7 days in Victoria. Did a lot of cool stuff, and Victoria's pretty. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and definitely being able to experience Victoria and Tasmania within a similar span of days, it was awesome to be able to compare the two, you know?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Tasmania's still better.
Tasmania is incredible, that's true.
So in our last segment, we like to go over an insight and an adventure that wasn't covered earlier. And so I'll do the insight this time. And it's become apparent over since Lee and I have been together, but even more so as we prepare for this podcast from week to week. Leah loves and needs to write things down to remember. That is just the way that she works. And I work quite differently. I do not like to write things down. I have horrific handwriting. I don't like to write. I'm a terrible speller. And Leah mentioned one day, she was like, yeah, you're really good at remembering numbers or remembering things. And like, even though we're doing the podcast, she has like a notebook, her phone, and another piece of paper. And I had some notes on my phone, and that's like it. And I'm pretty sure that my ability to have a good memory, to remember things, whether it's just facts or numbers or whatever it is, I do feel like I have a pretty good memory for a lot of different things. It's just my adaptation, because I have dyslexia. And so I've just learned that I don't like to write things down, and it is just easier for me just to remember it that way.
Yeah, and that was such a light bulb moment for me to realize that that is exactly what it is. You know, if Steve can just remember it correctly the first time, then he doesn't have to worry about switching up letters or numbers. Whereas I did decent in school, but all I did was just have to quickly memorize something and never actually retain it. You know, you just study something quickly the night before and then regurgitate it and then never fully absorb it. And so Steve has all these amazing things tucked away, you know, especially from his undergrad. I feel like I did not take advantage of my undergrad enough to actually like fully absorb all of the really interesting stuff that I learned. And so writing stuff down is way easier for me, and Steve has had a lifetime of really exercising his memory, and so it's really good. And I'm kind of jealous because my memory is so bad, like so bad it's embarrassing.
It is a little embarrassing.
I mean, the joke is like, I can't even remember like celebrities. Like, I'm really bad with celebrities.
Or movies. Or anything.
Or movie plots. Yeah, book plots.
And I'll remember something and Leah's like, that's not it. And I'm like, no, this is how it was, or this is what the fact is. And then she'll have to look it up, and then she believes me.
Even just the koala thing. I couldn't even remember if I was driving or not, you know? I don't know. Yeah.
Anyways, I kind of knew that before, but I think that was the first time it really clicked for Leah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So I don't know if that was my insight or yours, but it's a game changer for me. And then the little adventure that we had was actually on one of our last days in Victoria. I mentioned that we had the opportunity to go to a lighthouse. The lighthouse was called Point Hicks Lighthouse. And I think that maybe technically we might have trespassed on some private property to get there because there's some accommodation. I don't know.
No one was around.
Yeah, no one was around. It was rainy, and it was in I wish I could remember the name of the national park, but Croydon Jingbalong National Park or something like that, on the border of Victoria and New South Wales. But what's cool about this lighthouse, we just went to it on a whim because there was a brief break in the rain. It's drizzling. We're like, well, let's just go do something. And what's cool about the Point Hicks Lighthouse is that that is where Captain Cook first spotted Australia land in 1770, right around that point. So that was cool to see a part of major Australia history and just sort of stumble across it.
That is true. Dan, tell us who Captain James Cook is.
I don't know. Steve, do you want to tell us who Captain James Cook is? He's a very prominent figure in Australia history.
I'm sure you would look this up.
Nope, I didn't. I was just going to wing it. I'm doing better about taking less notes.
You're just going to wing it.
Yep.
Okay, well, let me tell you.
All right.
About James Cook, because he is important. So Captain James Cook was a British explorer and navigator, and he's credited for having the first European contact on the eastern coastline of Australia, the Hawaiian Islands, actually, and the first recorded circumnavigation of New Zealand.
Yeah, so pretty famous explorer that have a lot of things sort of named after him. But yeah, so it was cool to stumble across that lighthouse and see that it was actually pretty significant.
It was significant. And Cook was, he was attacked and killed while attempting to kidnap a native chief of Hawaii.
Oh my goodness.
I shouldn't laugh.
Yeah, I don't know how to react to that. Wow, 9 years later.
9 years later.
Yeah, I don't know how to react to that. That's awful. And like, what are you thinking, buddy?
Well, that's just the history. That's just the story of white Westerners mucking up things.
Yeah.
And that's our podcast.
It's a terrible place to end our podcast.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Instagram at Insightful Adventures. That's a great place to see pictures that we've posted and connect.